This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Today, I have several guests in the studio with me, and we're going to be discussing various aspects of what's working in the government market as far as marketing goes. I have Lisa DeZutti of Market Connections, Ralph Renzi of WTOP and WFED, and Rita Walston of the Immix Group. Welcome, guys. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, Mark. Great to be here.
It's DC. I really appreciate you taking the time to come down. Let's start this way. Rita, tell people who you are, what you do, and what Immix is.
Of course. I'm Rita Walston. I'm the Senior Director of Client Marketing at Immix Group. We're based in McLean, Virginia, and we help IT companies do business with the government. I lead a team of about 11-12 people who help our clients market to the government.
And you just hosted a very successful event recently.
Well, thank you very much. We were very pleased with our first government IT sales summit.
It was a fabulous event.
It was a great event.
It was fun to speak at.
Ralph Renzi, Director of Federal Sales for WTOP and Federal News Radio, and also publisher of Federal Marketing Insights, our blog, and honored to be on such a distinguished panel with all of you, so thank you.
Cool. And your first time on my show, I think.
First time, yeah. Wow.
Lisa.
Lisa DeZutti, President of Market Connections. We're a full-service market research firm serving federal agencies, government contractors, and other B2B organizations.
Okay. Let me set the stage a little bit here. Number one reason people lose business is the client doesn't know them. Forrester Research recently came out with a study that said 70% of the buying decision is made prior to the customer even approaching a vendor. We have the federal travel restrictions still in place. The budget's tight. LPTA, FSSI, reverse auctions still with us. Competition not slacking off. FOSSI in the era of big shows is apparently gone. From Lisa's recent studies, social media use is up. Mobile is way up.
Way up.
Way up. Attendance at events is down. Print seems to be down, and blah or EPUBs are up, and the reading of and writing of blogs is high again. Is this accurate?
Yeah, print is down, obviously, from the early years. It has really leveled off as a preferred tool. You still have about 20% of the federal population that prefers to get their information via print publication, but significantly more that want to access information electronically.
But they're accessing those publications online or via the e-news programs, et cetera. It's not necessarily the fact that they're lost total readership here.
Correct. Okay. And then blogs, we've seen a steady increase, not huge increases over the last 3 or 4 years, but steady increases in both reading and writing blogs.
Okay. Well, that leads to topic number one, and that's content's been with us forever, but capturing, it seems to be capturing a new audience, and content marketing is huge. It's a buzzword. Lots of books. I write about it frequently. Is there something different going on with content now? So, Rita, you know, Immix has an extremely robust website, immixgroup.com. If you haven't been there, go there, click on the resources, and spend a month or so reading the stuff.
There's definitely enough there to spend a month or so. We are very dedicated to content marketing. We feel, as you say, everybody's making their buying decisions largely before they talk to anybody in sales. So you want to be able to influence that conversation. And it kind of goes back, if you remember, 14, 15 years ago, everybody started talking about Web 2.0. People didn't want to be talked at. They wanted to take part in the conversation. Mm-hmm. So we're providing several different ways for our clients to do that. In addition to mxgroup.com, we launched a couple of years ago a blog that is government-focused called Federal Technology Insider, so federaltechnologyinsider.com. And again, it's a place to really highlight what's working, what are you doing? It's not a place for a sales pitch. It's a place for you to influence the conversation about how people are talking about you. And I think that's the important thing. People are going to be talking about you. You want to be taking part in that conversation and helping to direct it.
Mm-hmm. And Ralph, you indicated that you have done something that most radio stations really haven't, and that's beefed up the non-airtime content. Why?
Client demand. So clients have demanded certain assets, and that forces media companies like us to evolve and deliver those assets. So we've delivered, and like you said, Mark, yeah, a typical radio station, or when you look at a marketing handbook, how to reach federal decision makers, radio station is typically not listed as the number one way to do it. So we've had to evolve pretty quickly to do video, microsites, customized microsites, content marketing, native advertising, as we call it inside mm-hmm. the business, so that we can deliver credible content to the end users in a fashion that becomes a resource to them. It's not just a sales pitch.
Okay. Native advertising to me brings up images of totem poles. I say content.
I would just add to what Ralph said. I think, yeah, content has been around forever, but I think technology is really driving the resurgence of content and content marketing because, you know, we're now much better able to make content interactive. We're able to geo-target our content. So there are technology tools out now that weren't out even a few years ago mm-hmm. that make content marketing, I think, more valuable, and we are able to see a greater return on that investment.
Well, there's a number of missteps that I see in the market as far as content marketing goes. The number one issue is mistaking sales collateral for content. The number two issue, and it may be number one actually, is people can't write, shouldn't write. There's a reason that freelancers exist, and that's to make sense out of techno babble without verbs and punctuation. But there's also, when you get into the automated tools that share content, I run a number of groups on LinkedIn, and I've got a couple of people that I perpetually put in promotions now because they're posting 8 or 9 times a day. And I ping them and they say, well, Hootsuite did it, I didn't. I'm going, well, who's doing Hootsuite? So let's start off with mistaking sales collateral. Lisa, your studies cover a lot of this. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the venues for legitimate content. What are they and how are people using them?
Well, I think, we saw the same issue years ago with events, Mark, in terms of attendees complaining that events were nothing more than a sales pitch and they weren't delivering valuable content. We hear the same thing with thought leadership and content marketing and what's being posted and white papers that are being developed. So I think that, you need to have legitimate, valuable, objective content that is educating the audience and providing them with information that's helping them solve a challenge or a problem that they're having. And there are a lot of different venues, and social media is really a great platform to help distribute that. Now, we use social media to drive, it's a channel to help drive people to our content, whether that's content on our blog, content on our website. LinkedIn is the number one driver of traffic to our website. So we use social media to drive people to our content.
You had a good teacher on LinkedIn, though.
Yes, we certainly did.
So, but I mean, when you talk about social media, we're not just talking social networks. We're talking webinars, blogs, EPUBs, eBooks, video, podcasts.
Yeah.
And Ralph, again, you didn't tell me it happened, but when I stumbled across the video blog, I'm going, this is pretty damn cool.
Nice, nice.
So...
Yeah, to complement what Lisa just said, you've got a perfect storm. We have an abundance of an appetite for digital delivery and consumption of content through digital means. Events are down. In the recent market connection studies, I believe it was 58% of govies asked did not participate in any events in the prior year.
That's right.
Is that correct?
That's right.
So you've got digital delivery. Nobody's going to events like they have in the past.
Even higher on the defense side in terms of event attendance being down.
So okay.
Absolutely.
Right. We've seen video keynotes. So
the question is, how can an industry client deliver a credible message that is consumed by their target or their end user as being resourceful? And what we have found at WTOP and Federal News Radio is if we can hold and maintain that editorial line, there's value to our partners and our industry partners in doing that, in that we can take concepts, we can take topics, turn it over to an editorial team, and then let them turn it into resources and content that our end users can consume. And therefore, it completely is the opposite of a sales pitch.
Yeah. And Rita, you with you represent at least 100+ manufacturers.
Yes.
And you sell to the entire reseller community and you sell direct. But you, more importantly, you control a lot of the money that is spent, and you know, it is what it is, right?
Well, I try to give good advice about where you should spend that money.
You have to.
And the big thing is, how do you build credibility? And really, you can work so hard to be in different channels, as Ralph said, so that you're having your message in different places, in different ways. And you put one really big sales pitch in there, or one really badly written thing, or you know, a Hootsuite that you had no idea it was out there, and you damage that credibility. So I think you really have to build up that credibility. You have to give your content legs. It can't just be a check the box, hey, I posted this blog post, great, I'm done for the month. I think you have to have it in different places. You have to give it different ways, try to make it evergreen, try to be relevant. But, you know, as you said, Lisa, really addressing a challenge and helping right. folks solve their problem is so much better than anything else.
Okay. We're going to take our first break. My guests today are Lisa DeZutti of Market Connections, Ralph Renzi of WTOP and WFED, and Rita Walston of the Immix Group. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower, primarily because nobody else volunteered. My guests today are Lisa DeZutti of Market Connections, Ralph Renzi of WTOP and Federal News Radio, and Rita Walston of Immix Group. And number one, you can find Immix Group at immixgroup.com. You can find WTOP on your radio dial. And Federal News Radio, obviously, is 1500 AM, federalnewsradio.com.
And the website.
And the
That's
website,
right. Thank you,
yes, and Market Connections Inc. I said that there's a lot of information at theimixgroup.com. Obviously, there's a lot of information at all three websites, and I've referenced Lisa's study sort of tangentially here. She does a marketing and media study that I use in my seminars, in my articles, in my books, and when I want to go to sleep.
So as do most people.
I never let this stuff go. It's with me 24/7. So you wanted to follow up on the last thing, Lisa.
Yeah, I was just going to follow on to what Rita was saying, and federal decision makers are using so many different mechanisms
yes.
to consume information. It's not just a handful the way it used to be in years gone by. I mean,
exactly.
You've got 10, 12 or more different avenues for people to consume information, whether it be videos, whether podcasts, blogs, websites, microsites, whatever it is. It is a lot. So that is a challenge, I think, for marketers. So to your point, Rita, really having to give guidance to people. I mean, people have to be very strategic about where they're putting their dollars and not putting them just in one bucket or two buckets, because people don't consume information that way anymore, and our research shows that.
Yeah, the content marketing leads to the next topic, segue, whatever, and that is the reemergence of thought leadership. Oddly enough, thought leadership as a phrase has only been around for about 20 years. It was first used in the Booz Allen Hamilton Strategy and Business magazine in the early 90s. And when I found that out, it blew me away, because I thought it had been here like since Ben Franklin or something, maybe in Poor Richard. But the idea of thought leadership is predicated on defining and owning a certain set of intellectual property. And I know that Rita's got some issues with this, because everybody wants to be one.
Absolutely. I work with a number of clients, and very often the directive will come down to my client's marketing department from on high. We need to have a presence in thought leadership. We need to be driving the conversation. We need people to think of our company as thought leaders. And what I kindly
helps
try
to
find
Steve
out,
around.
It helps to have Steve Charles around, definitely. But I said, in order to really have appropriate thought leadership, you need a leader with some thoughts. And that might sound a little bit glib, but it can be difficult for a company to identify who is going to be your leader, who is the person that you're going to put forward as your subject matter expert, and how will they talk about this? How will they write about this? How will they be articulate? How often are they willing to do it? Very often they'll identify a thought leader, but that person just doesn't have the bandwidth to be writing articles and be writing the content and be interviewed for the content. That makes a thought leadership campaign much more challenging.
Well, you know, give you two examples. Having somebody in the studio who has to think for about 40 seconds before a word pops out. You know, the fortunately, my show is recorded so we can squeeze out the dead air time. But if they're on Francis or on Tom, you know, that may not happen. I've also attended keynotes where CEOs have been there and they start off with a room half full and it ends up with their three marketing people sitting, you know, sort of around the room at the end because everybody's vacated the premises. What happens here? Ralph or Lisa, please jump in.
Well, I think, you know, what Rita just said, having the ability to coach some people who are your perceived thought leaders, meaning they have the knowledge, but how do we have them communicate that knowledge effectively? And as Lisa said, across all channels. So what we're seeing a lot of is how can we communicate messages with thought leadership that is a resource across all these different choices of marketing channels that we have? One thing that comes to mind, Mark, and I know you're heavily involved with it, with social media, you know, do you have a social media policy at your place of work? What are the rules? Who is allowed to promote things during through social media? What are some things to watch out for? There's some landmines in social media. And not just saying, yeah, we need to do it, but actually having a policy and using it like any other silo within an organization so that it is tried and true, and here's how we do it, it's functional, and it's strategic, is very important. So it's a great, and Immix Group is a great resource for that because they're such a hybrid company of being in the business and also helping their partners.
What we encourage clients to do, because we do thought leadership, we support thought leadership a little bit different from what Rita is doing, through research. So what we encourage them to do is to take that research, couple it with, you know, internal SME perspectives, and to be objective. We've all talked about that. And clients are hesitant. They want to go down that path of self-promoting. We encourage them to be objective, to talk about their solution, what other solutions there are in the market, advantages and disadvantages of each. And that builds credibility and trust with them. And it's amazing how reluctant clients are to do that. They're very hesitant to talk about any other solution but their own.
Well, even if they just address the issues at large and not offer the solution, what are the problems?
Right.
You know, defining a problem is where you start with the solution. But, you know, my issue with thought leadership is that not only do these people have to know this stuff, they have to be recognized and accepted by the community for it. So thought leadership's not a self-bestowed title. SME subject matter expert can be as long as it's real. But there's so many people out there. You know, I've seen people with thought leader in their LinkedIn headline. And I'm going, no, you're not. You know, you don't pat yourself on the back.
It often is self-bestowed.
It often is. But Ralph, give me some criteria here for what constitutes a legitimate thought leader.
So obviously, having the knowledge and experience and credibility that we all think is, you know, commonplace in order to be able to go in front of people and not just communicate, but be a resource and communicate some content that's valuable to them. So I think that's step one. Step two is you know, we all have the picture of our mind of the mad professor who's in a corner, who's brilliant, but can't speak. And we've all had teachers like that and college and that kind of stuff, that the person's brilliant, but I really can't get understand it's monotone and all that kind of stuff. So we have to work with these thought leaders, even though they may be high up the chain. We need to work with them so that they can effectively communicate their message. And as you said earlier, Mark, that's both written message, that is a on-air message, that is social media message. So how are we coaching them so they can communicate, or making the tough decision to say, you're not our thought leader. You've got the knowledge, but we need somebody with a little bit of a dynamic personality so that we can have impact in the marketplace and communicate our message.
Yeah. Who's driving that bus?
Yeah, very often. We try to help drive that bus, but I totally agree with you, Ralph. You can have folks where they may be very articulate on the fly, but it's very difficult for them to put a sentence together. So they're having a ghostwriter behind them. Can they be brief? What, you know, brevity is the soul of wit if you've got to do the tweets. So it can be very difficult to find that one person who not only is well-versed in their field, but then can communicate, as Lisa, you said, on all of these different platforms that are so necessary. And to your point, Mark, that credibility is not built overnight. It isn't even self-bestowed, but you can't say, well, I did 3 blog posts this month, ergo, I am now a thought leader. It takes a while to build that. And I know that we work with our clients to help do different training. How do you speak in person? Can you talk off the cuff? I know some clients who have a thought leader, and it's like, if I can have this guy prepped, he's wonderful. He's not allowed to talk off the cuff. So it can be very difficult to find that combination for that perfect thought leader.
And I think clients should make that investment. And whether it's in that kind of coaching, or if it's in a third party that's writing or doing tweets for you, writing content for you, if you can find the right resource, I think that can be very valuable.
It's definitely an investment.
Okay. My guests today are Lisa DiZzuti, Market Connections, Ralph Renzi, WTOP and WFED, and Rita Walston of Immix Group. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guests today are Rita Walston, Immix Group, Ralph Renzi, WTOP and WFED, and Lisa, the lovely and talented Lisa DiZzuti of Market Connections. I do that to embarrass her. And she
didn't call me lovely and talented.
No, that's next segment. next segment. All right. So venues. I mentioned early on that the era of the mega show is dead. It's not probably dead. It's dead. It's not serving a purpose in the market. But that's not to say that events are gone. By no means is that accurate. They seem to be growing, and I think part of your study indicates what on this?
Yeah, most certainly, event attendance is down, but it's really the mix of events that people are attending that has changed. And a lot of that is from the pressure of travel restrictions, declining budgets, not having money. So they are going to smaller local events. So contractors are having to look at how do they reach people. Some of them have started doing more what I will call road shows, where they take their show on the road and they're traveling around the country to their customers, various bases on the defense side. They may be doing an event on a base within an agency. They may be doing something at a local hotel, but it is essentially going where your customer is and not counting on your customer to travel to these bigger shows, which are just no longer successful.
Okay. Rita, you guys are responsible, again, for a fairly significant chunk of money, but you work with literally hundreds of companies. What types of events are most productive for you and your partners?
We're seeing when they're very focused events, you want them to be very editorial, again, avoiding that sales pitch. The type of event that I've seen to be very effective is to go where the government is. You mentioned road shows, Lisa. We'll do technology days on the base, incorporating some aspect of training in there. What can your attendees learn while they're there? What can you have them walk away with that they didn't come with, some sort of knowledge? Also blending multiple manufacturers. Instead of having a single manufacturer event, having more than one, complementary manufacturers, because you're more likely to get government editorial speakers, you're more likely to get government attendees, their managers are more likely to approve their attendance if it doesn't look like they're endorsing one manufacturer over another. So what we see that really works is go where the government is, go where your customer, your prospect is located, hone it, incorporate some training and try to be there with multiple manufacturers instead of just one manufacturer. You don't want a sales pitch.
The other piece to that, Rita, which I'm sure you all have seen, is that having a customer give a case study can also be very effective, or talk about the solution that's working for them.
Absolutely. A lot of times, I know in the federal space, they're not always permitted to do that. Mm-hmm. If they are, that's absolutely...
It's gold.
It's gold. Right. Use it wisely.
Right. Yeah. Ralph, I speak about 30, 35 times a year, and I'd swear about half the times when I go, there's Jason or Tom or somebody's there, doing interviews on the side. But Federal News Radio has taken a more active role in sponsoring various events.
Right.
What role are you playing here now?
So we have two roles. You know, one role is our editorial side, which is, like you just said, getting out and having our journalists out at events, not only from a marketing standpoint, like industry is looking to get, so we can have an impact, but also gathering content, which derives into our own thought leadership. These journalists are experts in their field, and this is a great way to get thought leadership and be the thought leader in their own space. Second view is industry, and what Rita just said is so true. The number one question we get when it comes to events, when we're talking to industry clients, is how many government attendants are at the event? It's not just that we're at event. Who's there that is our end user? And that's become a crucial point. Once again, it goes to the data. 70%, I think, is what we see tossed around as being a valuable number of attendees that are of government that need to be at an event for it to be deemed successful. And I think, Mark, there's a few things that are influencing the changing of events. Resources, like we talked about earlier, shrinking budgets and how you're allocating your marketing dollars is very, very important. Time management. Who has time to go to a three-day event in another city and that kind of thing? We're all pressed for time now. So going shooting downtown, metro accessible, jumping out for a few hours is much more efficient way of use of our time. And then, Rita, you mentioned it, training. We're seeing a lot of continuing education, and we're seeing that drive events. You know, can I get CE credits for some things that I'm working on if I'm an end user?
That's one of the criteria feds need to get out of the office.
There you go.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There you go.
So, and Rita, this is going to be geared towards you, and Lisa, your study may bear this out. There's 28 cities outside of Washington, D.C. that carry a federal executive board, which means that there is a cluster of federal activity around that major metropolitan area, and most likely a federal employment body of in excess of 20,000 people, up to, in some cities, over 60,000 people. Do you take your things to those, let's take Denver, for instance. There's only about 30,000 feds in Denver, but there's about 32 or 33 agencies at the Denver Federal Center. And talk about visiting. How do you take your customers out there on your roadshows? Or?
Absolutely. And what I try to tell our clients is, when you're going to have a live event, it's a very important component for that face-to-face networking. That, yes, all of these other webinars, content marketing help, but it cannot replace that face-to-face time. So you need to really make the maximum use of that if you go there. And it's also about level setting expectations. I've worked with clients sometimes and I'll say, okay, if we're going to Denver, if we're going to San Antonio, or if we're going out to Fort Huachuca, you have to realize that we're going to hone our message. It's going to be a very select audience. It's going to be a smaller audience, but it's quality over quantity, and you have to make it count. And usually it ends up with me, the client, saying, oh, no, I got that. I said, okay, so what defines success for you? And they may say, well, hey, if we get 75 to 125 people there, I'm happy. I'm like, no. I'm talking about getting 15 to 25 maybe, which I think for some of these outside DC locations is a good solid attendance number if they are the right people.
Right.
And then how do you leverage that? How do you make sure that when you do get them there, you're making it worth their time to have attended?
Yeah, it's, in the big era going away, in the early 90s, legitimately there were well over 50,000 people attending FOSSE, but the vast majority of them were collecting tchotchkes. Okay,
they in those walk giant up, bags,
but you walk out of the convention center and you'd see piles of giant bags, and probably full of tchotchkes. But it's never been a numbers game from my perspective. It's a quality game, exactly what you just said. Are the right people going to be there? And that's where it is. So Lisa?
No, I think absolutely. You've got to make sure you're reaching the right people. But the other point I wanted to add on region, feds in the region, is you can't peanut butter your marketing message, because often the needs of federal decision makers in the region are different than what you see here in the Washington area. So federal marketers need to keep that in mind and understand what those differences are.
That's a great point. You know, you mentioned Fort Huachuca, Arizona. Those of us that have ever been to Sierra Vista or Fort Huachuca, that's about as extremely different as the Washington, D.C. metro as you can get.
Yes.
So that's a great point. And then what are they doing at Fort Huachuca that helps you with your resources and message delivery?
A lot.
Yeah, a lot. That's right.
So it's all about doing that homework. It isn't just about wash, rinse, repeat. You know, right. Identify the goal. If you're going to Fort Huachuca or Denver or San Antonio, what is the goal there? What do you want to achieve?
River
and then
walk.
Make sure that you are leading up to that.
Yeah. Anything else on events? Okay, we're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. We will be back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. Multiple guests today: Lisa DeZutti, Market Connections, Rita Walston of Immix Group, and Ralph Renzi of Federal News Radio and WTOP. Lisa, the massive point of the last study was the ridiculous growth of mobile, which ties into all of the Web 2.0 stuff, because everybody's absorbing differently.
Yeah, 80%. The last study showed 80% of federal decision makers carrying some sort of mobile device. And it's really just become so ubiquitous in our personal lives, and that's transferring over to what we do in our professional lives as well. And that makes it so critical that federal marketers have mobile solutions, that they're optimizing their marketing for mobile viewing. And we see a much greater interaction with ads on mobile devices. We see probably click-through rates that on mobile devices that are four times what you get through other vehicles. So it's huge. And I think part of it is because we can make it so personalized. You can geo-target, you can domain target, you can make it interactive, you can make it fun. You talked about even having an app. Most people have an app on their phone. I mean, there's so much you can do from a marketing perspective with a mobile device.
Okay. Reed, are you guys playing there?
We're definitely playing there. And the advice that we'll give our clients is you do have to make sure, though, if you're on a mobile device, it's a much smaller footprint.
Yes, it has to be optimized.
You can't just take what you've got on a regular computer monitor and say, oh, it'll look fine on the mobile device. I think video can work very well on the mobile device as well. So again, it gets into that brevity. How can you take a message that maybe you devote two or three paragraphs to on your regular website, and how do you optimize it for a mobile that has to be very, very succinct? You've got to get your message across succinctly.
We see people downloading white papers via their mobile device. They're registering for events via their mobile device. So
a lot of capture their attention, though.
A lot of business
to get them to download it.
But a lot of business is being done on a mobile device.
Well, it's indicative. Look at the size of the iPhone 6 Plus and the Galaxy and those Samsungs, and those phones are so big. And when you, so I've got one of those giant phones, and the reason I have it is so that I can watch video. And if I'm at a lunch appointment with a business associate, I can show our video capability. So you're exactly right. The mobile usage, I feel, has changed from phone and email to video and web.
Exactly.
And then with that, you know, all that data, once again, we're spoiled by the matrix of marketing right now. So how do you give proper attribution to your mobile strategy, to your online strategy, to your thought leadership strategy, to your Google AdWords strategy, to your all the different things that you're doing? So we're finding that understanding the data and then giving proper attribution is key. And that is a little bit more complicated than what it said, because sometime that we had a marketing consultant come in and describe a big giant search engine to us. And he said, the search engine is the taxi. It's the motive that takes one consumer from one place to the other. It doesn't get the credit. The credit goes to who you are, where you are, how you were found, the organic search, and all that kind of stuff. The taxi cab shouldn't always get the credit. And I thought that was kind of interesting.
That is interesting. Anything else on mobile before I migrate one more time, one last time?
Well, I would say, and I'd be interested to know what you all are hearing. Yes, the smartphones, and they're getting bigger and bigger. But I'm seeing a number of different federal people come to our events, and they've got tablets.
Yeah.
And they're starting to use that sometimes instead of the smartphone. Lisa, in the study, is there a distinction between the mobile phone and the tablet?
We did not distinguish between the two, but that 80% number that I quoted includes tablets. So it is not just a smartphone. It's smartphone and tablets.
Mm-hmm. I remember a compact that was mobile, but it was a suitcase and it weighed 62 pounds. So I want to migrate to one last topic, and it's near and dear to me because I'm here on the radio, and that's the apparent resurgence of broadcast. Federal News Radio actually started off as a web-based broadcast program about 11 years or so ago, and they had one audience in mind, which was the federal employee. A few years after that, they invited me in to do the first show targeting the government contractor community, for which I am eternally grateful because I get to annoy more people more often. but Ralph, you know, what's the impact of this the broadcast now? Because we don't see a lot of stats on that, but I get comments everywhere I go.
Yeah, that it's a great point. You know, we get caught up in the shiny object, I feel, of marketing, of what's new and different. We get the question all the time. Rita, you and I had lunch the other day. We get the same question from clients. What's new? What's different? Well, hold on. The program you just did delivered everything that we set out to deliver. And is what happened? I need something new and different. So we get caught up in the shiny object. And I feel like sometimes that takes us away from the quote-unquote traditional media. And I don't even like that word because it doesn't sound too exciting. But traditional media still has impact. You mentioned Mike Causey earlier. So Mike Causey is a huge personality on Federal News Radio, and he was on beat reporter for the Washington Post for over 20 years and covers federal benefits. He may not like this description, but when I'm in front of clients, I describe Mike as our Kim Kardashian of the federal marketplace.
Because Mike would love that and take it in another direction.
He is a celebrity, and when you mention Mike Causey to a federal employee, they love him. They know exactly who he is, and they follow
Probably
him.
Probably looks better without clothes, too.
And he's better looking. So yes, Federal News Radio has had a reverse migration. It started out as a web radio station that has evolved into a terrestrial radio station as well as a web. We call it a publication online because it is a trade publication online. It just so happens that our accompanying distribution point is radio instead of print, so it makes it very unique.
Mm. But you know, I don't know what the live listenership is. We still don't have a book on it, but I do know that you've got extremely significant web traffic.
We do. So our web traffic on Federal News Radio is over 2 million page views per month. It's over 200,000 uniques per month and growing. WTOP also has a huge federal audience online, over 18 million page views per month on WTOP. And then we can do .gov, .mil,
always
and geographic
has.
Domain. Yeah, thank
yeah,
you, Lisa.
Always has.
So
yeah.
Both mediums, and I had a conversation with a former executive who was used in a thought leadership campaign on WTOP and Federal News Radio, and this person said to me, if I would have known the impact of radio, if somebody would have explained to me what was going to happen to me when I was on the radio, because they were used as a thought leader, and it launched them. They've become the thought leader because of the way that they were marketed on the radio. So it still has that impact that I think we have to be careful of leaving.
And I wonder, you're curious on your opinion, Ralph, if what has happened in our market the last couple of years has benefited radio because people's budgets have been squeezed and what they don't have the big dollars for print. Print is not as effective as it used to be. And some of those dollars have migrated to radio. And so people have learned how effective it can be.
No, that's a great point, Lisa. And what we found also is we do integrated marketing programs much more. Integrated meaning we have digital, radio, microsites, on-air, video, all combined into a marketing program. It no longer just stands alone.
I completely agree, Ralph. And to what we were talking about earlier about thought leadership needing to have legs and you need to build that credibility. And I do think that radio can help with that a great deal. With our clients, very often we'll do the radio panels. And so then it'll air on WFED, then it's available as a podcast. Commercials will air with relevant clips that drive people to that website. So I think having a whole integrated campaign gives it the legs. And I do think that radio is a venue for thought leadership that is stronger, I think, that almost anything else. Yes. There's something about just being on the air that seems to lend some gravitas.
The spoken word.
Right. There's some credibility there that just doesn't come through as well, I think, as it does with radio for thought leadership.
Our biggest question we get in this traditional media setting is, how do you measure it? So, and again, diving into how do you measure it, I've evolved in my answer to that question. And now I say, can we have login to your Google Analytics, or can we get a baseline right now? Let's run an on-air campaign, and let's look at your baseline on your Google Analytics. Because typically, we're marketing a website or some sort of white paper, a microsite.
Right.
So let's measure the traffic that goes there. And that sounds very common sense, but when we do that, we can typically say, okay, let's get a good judge of this campaign and let's see what's happening. If we have a thought leader on there, let's put their Twitter feed on there. Have they received more followers? So there's some measurements that we can use now that can accompany a traditional broadcast campaign.
And the other piece that we do for measurement is a radio tracking survey. And we did one recently for a client. We found that through that survey that the ads were effective, but they weren't on the right station. So we hopefully they came your way. We made a recommendation.
Rita, last word.
I think just integrating all of it. I mean, I love, we really tap the resources of folks like Ralph, like Lisa, others in the community. And I think you just have to look at credibility. You have to look at having an editorial nature to your marketing. You have to look at identifying what does your prospect or customer want to learn about, and then bring that to the fore and don't be salesy.
There you go. Thank you all very much for coming in. You've been listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. This is not my day job. I advise companies on all facets of marketing to the government, and I train companies and individuals on leveraging LinkedIn. Reach me at mark@federaldirect.net. And thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.